just want to mention that Chris Spadola, who is the first name after mine on there, was an interviewer in the first half of the whole project and has done so well that she's now the intervention site director, so I have to give her a lot of credit there. Dr. Surratt and Nunziardi are the principal investigators on the project. This is a project, by the way, I'm going to go a little bit out of order and slide by some of the slides here because of time, but I have a handout, so you'll have it all to take home if you want it. The background in Miami, CDC has declared Miami as an emergency state for HIV/AIDS levels for years, and it still is, and it's particularly among African-American women. So that continues to be a very serious problem down there. We developed a Women Protecting Women program that ran for 5 years, which I'm going to refer to as Phase 1, and that's just a little background. Oh, my goodness. It's black, gray, and white, and pink, by the way. The project that I'm going to refer to today, the main project I'm talking about, is the second phase of the study. The first was 5 years, and this one is the second 5 years. So the first one was 2001 to 2006. Basically, that was an HIV prevention research study, and it was a peer-based model. It was designed by sex workers for sex workers, and that's street-based sex workers, all drug involved. We found that some of those peer interventions, we had two interventions, and we compared the sex worker design focus intervention with the standard NIDA intervention for HIV prevention. And we found in the peer interventions that the peers helped to reduce the sex behaviors, the risky behaviors for HIV. They helped to reduce drug use in the clients. They helped to increase treatment entry. And that became a key because this population doesn't access services very easily. We also found that a number of factors that none of this will surprise you, that contribute to serious health problems on this population were like drug use, homelessness, street life, rape, violent victimizations. Those were rampant. And during the first project, we discovered in focus groups that most of the barriers that the women expressed in accessing services fell into two groups. So we identified one group as structural barriers. Those are things that have to do with the system or the program or something that made it not appropriate or didn't work well for the women to access. And the other was individual barriers, and those were their own barriers, the things that happened within them, their characteristics, their personal behavior. So based on all of that, we decided to do Phase 2, and Phase 2 is the main part of this. That is a case management study. We did a pilot in the first one, and in the second study, it is strictly case management to provide linkages to people to services to see if there are particular ways of doing case management for this population that work better than the other ways. So we're trying to reduce barriers to health care, help them get into drug treatment and other services, and of course increase quality of life. The strengths-based case management approach, it underpins both of our conditions that we have randomly assigned people to, the women to. This is a really useful approach for this population, and they find it to be something very new, and they like it because they're used to going places and having all their problems pointed out to them and their deficits pointing out to them and all the things they're not doing right pointed out to them. So this is based on their assets, their strengths, and their abilities, and the women themselves direct the nature of the strategies that are used to help them access the services. And then we figure out with the women how best to address any barriers that they might have. So they really respond well to this because it's a new thing for them and they feel good after every time they're there. It's a 5-session project. The 5 sessions are the strength-based case management sessions. We have 2 groups. I'll show you that in just a minute. This was based on a project done at Wright State in Ohio. And in that 5 sessions, it goes over 60 days. So it's on an average of 1 session a week over a 60-day period. Now, these are mostly structured. You can read it here. It's to help them get ready to make linkages, to build a relationship with their team, to get strategies from them for things that they want to change or they want to do. And these are things they have to decide within the 5-week period. It doesn't have to be accomplished within the 5-week period. So we're testing two alternative strategies. Hello. Well, that's okay. Thank you. It's easier to read. We're testing two alternative strategies. Both of them are strengths-based. And we're randomly assigning 550 participants to either of the two. One of them is a professional only. That's a professional case manager only. The second is a professional case manager with a peer in a team. Now, the case management team has a credentialed professional case manager in each one of the conditions. But in only one of those conditions is the peer, and that's a recovering addict who is a former sex worker and who is specially trained to help facilitate access to services. We're trying to test the value added of the peer case approach. On your left, in the peer and the professional case manager condition, the characteristics that are listed on the left and the right are in that combined piece. In the professional only, it's just the ones on the right. The main difference between the two is that in the peer professional condition, the peer professional group, the peer remains in contact with the client over 6 months' time. The case manager in both groups only has contact with the client during the 5 sessions over that 60-day period. You may want to know why 60-day period, because we did some pilot tests, and also this population is, you know, if I don't get it now, I can't deal with it, and it's very short term, and sense of timing is completely different than a lot of long-term type projects. So the case manager will provide referrals and can even go out to the field during those referrals, but that can only occur during the 5 sessions, the 60 days. In the peer added piece, this goes on for 6 months, and the peer can stay in touch with them regularly, support them, get involved with them, go to appointments with them, and really has a much larger role. Basically, the study design, they all do the informed consent drug screen, baseline interview, and then they get randomly assigned to the two. And they both have 3 and 6 month follow-ups. The clients are between 18 and 50 years old. They have to be African American, engaged in illegal drug use 3 times a week, and in sex trading 3 times a month. Now, these are not full-time professional sex traders. Most of these women have already been there, done that, and they're slowing down a little bit. We started recruiting in May 2007, and through September 30th, we had 100 clients already recruited into the study, so the demographics are going to be on the 100. Average age in this group is a little over 40 years. More than half had less than a high school education. More than half were homeless in the past 90 days prior to entry, and almost a quarter were HIV positive. Their favorite drugs are alcohol and crack, often together, and followed by marijuana and other forms of cocaine. But alcohol and crack are definitely the main ones in this group. And their reports on the baseline, the data is able to be compared to the diagnosis tables. So we were able to determine early that 87% of these 100 actually meet the criteria for dependence, drug dependence. Not surprising. I don't think you'd be too surprised. Now, they have a mean of almost 15 years of in sex work, and 14 clients paying male partners in the past 3 months. These are older women. They tend to like having sex with regulars. They don't like to go out and try to find new ones. It's harder for them to go find new ones. So that 14 are 14 different people. These are not the number of sex acts that they've been involved in. And over 60% have unprotected vaginal sex in the 3 months prior. Not surprisingly, 81% had a lifetime history of some type of abuse. 36% were abused before age 18, and half were in trauma, had some kind of trauma at a very high level in the past year. They're presenting health problems, HIV, other STIs. Their other health problems, about half of them had some other health problems. The main ones were hepatitis, asthma, diabetes, and hypertension. Mental health problems across the board, and of course drug dependence. Their main barriers to care: no forms of insurance, no valid IDs, no access to personal transportation, very low income, which also covers their drug habit, so it's even lower, very, very low social support, no regular source of medical care. Very few of them have source of dental care. And a small group mentioned that somebody they knew didn't want them to go to treatment or get any help, and that was usually a boyfriend. Their barriers to drug treatment. Women were in several of these categories. This is not just a, you know, one piece for one woman here. They were afraid they'd fail in treatment, the treatment wouldn't help them. They were worried about child care, and of course the significant other didn't want them to get into treatment because they just really didn't think they ought to have it. So as of September 30th, the adherence to being in those each of those five sessions across the board of both conditions is really high. The women who have passed the 60-day intervention since we started, 94.6% of them have made all five sessions. They like the sessions. They want to come back because they feel good while they're in the sessions because they're positive sessions. Only three did not follow through. One went to jail, one moved out of state, and the other entered drug treatment before the fifth session. So far, so good. The linkages that are reported are high. You can see across the bottom the types of linkages. It may not look high to you right now, but any type of linkage at 57%, that's within the five sessions. Services in Miami, like everywhere, have these waiting lists. So a lot of the women didn't actually make their linkage until after the fifth session. The linkage was set up for them, but they didn't actually get there. So these are the ones that linked within the five sessions. Okay, a couple of illustrations. CC, she's 49 years old, used cocaine for 27 years, 24 years of sex work in Miami. She went into the professional peer group. Her main concern was extreme tooth pain. Her teeth were bad. She had one area that was just awful. And we wanted to link her with a dentist. She wanted to link with a dentist. So the structural barriers is the agency, the only one she could go to had a one-month waiting list. So she's in pain for a month, right? When she gets there, they had no record of her stuff. They acted unconcerned. Her individual barriers were she was in pain, she was mad, she was ready to give up and go home and tell them what she thought of them. So the peer was there on site, accompanied her to her appointment. She was able to advocate for the client, explain some of the situation. She called back to the office of the case manager, who got on the phone with the agency and gave them names, dates, and numbers about this appointment. And they ended up working it out. And the results was the client was seen within 2 days of that time, got it taken care of. And the peer was a pivotal point between the client, the agencies, and everybody. I'm going to let you read Shorty separately on your own. That is a mistake. It's not the professional peer. It's the professional only. Okay, options for peer management. This is important to have peers in case management. They can help with client engagement because they've been there, done that. Obviously, they can role model. They're an extra pair of hands. They can reach out to the community. This practical perspective and client progress reviews at the bottom is important. Many of us, even if we're trained in these areas, will think that the success should be bigger than it really is. And the peer was able to help bring a practical view to, look, this is what she did, and it may be little, but it's a success and it's a step forward. So she brought this practical perspective. Our peer, by the way, I have to brag on her a little bit. Our peers and our case managers are African-American women. Our peer went through the first case, the study, when I was the director of the program. And I didn't have anything to do with her getting here. She did well in the first program. She's been clean and sober and off the street for 5 years. And she worked at another program, and they called and recommended her, and we hired her just like that. And she's terrific. And I think my time is out. So you can read her comments. There's a list of things in the handout about, you know, different kinds of uses for peers in case management. We're very excited about this. You can read the comments and the conclusions that this is good. The women seem to like it. They seem to be making their linkages and accompanying it with a reduction in HIV risky behavior, and the peers seem to bring added feedback. The feedback is that the peers bring added value, excuse me. So 3-month data collection is now underway. We're going to have that shortly. We're starting 6 months very soon, like this month, and then outcome analysis in early 2008. So our preliminary stuff tells us that this stuff's going to look great, and we're very excited. Thank you very much.